In the Edenverse, we're going to help you understand the Bible through the lens of the original audience. I'm Nathan.
And I'm Karen, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey guys, my name's Nathan, and I'm here with a couple buddies of mine. To my left, your right, is Eric Smith. What's up, Eric?
I'm podcasting
today. You are podcasting. So Eric has been in the world of the Bible for a long time.
It's been a while.
Tell us a little bit about kind of what your experience is, especially in the realm of the ancient Near East, and why you're sitting here today.
Sure. My academic studies were primarily Genesis 1 to 11. More specifically, I wanted to understand how people in the ancient Near East told their stories, and if there were implications then for how we would understand Genesis 1 to 11 based on just storytelling principles in the ancient Near East. So that was my PhD work, which I did under Gordon Wenham. And
love that dude.
He's pretty cool. And then I taught for a while, and then along with Scott, founded the Pillar Seminary in 2014, and I moved on from that in 2020, in the fall of 2020. But I really felt like the Lord was ready to move me on, that my role was to be the entrepreneur, and it was time for new adventures. So since then, I've been writing and coaching executives.
I love it. Cool, man. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Eden Podcast. Scott, to my right, y'all's left, is Scott Booth. Do you
it came out so weird. I just squeaked.
Are you okay?
Oh, my gosh. All right.
So let's go. Right before we started recording this, Scott was like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
I just keep thinking, like, get out of my face.
So Scott, same question. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I studied... PhD in Old Testament, Ancient Near Eastern, History, Languages, and Archaeology at Trinity. My training is mostly in the texts of the Ancient Near East. I did most of my work was in how to kind of use text and archaeology together to get a good picture of what was going on, how to do it like accurately.
Got it.
And so most of the work I did was in Syria and Israel.
So there's like gathering the data, but then once the data is gathered, there's kind of like a bunch of different ways that people handle the data. Yeah. And you're like, hey, we should probably like think about how do we interpret this?
Yeah. It's like, how do you combine information when you have like people's newspaper reports, but you also have like what was in their kitchen and their bathroom. So you're like, how do you use those two things to say what's going on?
Yep. Get a much fuller picture of what's going on. Yeah. Awesome. I love it. So that's why these guys are here today, because in this episode, we're just really going to try to answer the question broadly, very broadly, what is the ancient Near East? And the reason we're doing that, as you heard before, is we're really trying to get you into the world of the Bible. So there's a cool trick that I do that's like super awesome. It's a super awesome magic trick. And a lot of times when I teach, I'll walk into the class and I'll take my Bible and go, all right, guys, I'm about to do something completely amazing. Are you ready? And everybody's kind of like waiting for like, okay, well, what's he going to do? You know, like pens and needles. And all I do is just open the Bible. And I'm like, did you see that? That was awesome. And everybody's like, what in the world? And I'm like, yeah, like check that out. Like I just opened the Bible. And of course, everybody's confused for a second, but then I use it as an illustration to go, hey, what we're actually doing when you open the scriptures is you're moving into a completely different world. Yeah. You're in a lot of ways, it's a time travel kind of thing where, you know, we really need to train ourselves to get out of a lot of our Western presuppositions, because we're entering into a completely different world. Different in almost every way, like obviously time, geography, language, culture, in the socio-political situation, in all of those ways. It's just different. And so
in all manner of propinquity. Shout out to Lawson Younger. Lawson Younger.
You're going to have to define that word for our audience.
It's just the nearness. That's the nearness. That's my mentor. He uses that word.
Yeah, totally.
A lot. He uses it a lot.
It is an awesome word.
It is.
Propinquity.
It's just like you're measuring nearness.
Yeah,
so you basically
how close are you to it or not?
Yeah.
And we're far away.
Yeah. Culture.
That's right.
Yep. Right. Yep. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah. So in order to help us kind of recover, hey, what is that world? I've got my buddies who are experts in the ancient Near East. And so we're going to kind of do that little magic trick today and go, all right, so if the assumption is, and I think it's a safe one, that a lot of the audience, a lot of you guys don't really understand that world, then Eric, I'm going to start with you and just go, hey, help. Even saying the word ancient Near East, people are probably like, what are you talking about? So help us define that for us and give people a sense of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the easy way to say it is the world of the Bible. And usually when we're talking about the ancient Near East, we're talking more specifically about the world that the Old Testament was set in. Yeah, so think the world of the Bible at the time of the Bible. Technically, the ancient Near East is more broad than that, but usually as Bible scholars, that's what we're referring to. And then you get these little debates about what's actually ancient, because what you'll soon learn is Scott actually studies the modern stuff.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
And I'm more
the super ancient
Near East. Yeah.
So you're going to have to describe, like, because you're a Sumerian guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I did Sumerology.
And Scott's a he's nodding off. Sorry, we started talking about Sumerology. Oh,
yeah.
But you studied Akkadian, right? Well, our people are like, what in the – so give us a little bit, like, do a little spar here for 30 seconds. Why is Sumerian better? And then we'll pass it over to Scott.
Oh, yeah, you're letting him come second so he can just clean up the mess. No, I mean, really what it boils down to is what your personal interest is. And so Sumerian, to me, it's really weird. Well, I guess we should define first. Sumerian, I don't even know how,
okay,
how,
so let's
how would
start,
you explain it?
So let's say, like, back to your, like, ancient Near East question.
Yep.
You got to go, like, so you're thinking, like, modern Iraq and Syria and down into Lebanon and Israel. But then, like, a little bit further out, you're also including in there a little bit of Iran, Turkey,
Egypt.
Yep, right?
Yeah,
yep. And so then
Cyprus.
So as you're studying ancient Near Eastern studies, you pick, like, you can kind of focus in on whatever. There's like batches of languages and texts that appear.
Yeah.
So huge chunks of texts are written in Iraq, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of depends on, like, as you kind of slide the time scale, they pop up differently. So you get big chunks of text from, like, Iraq and Syria, huge chunks from Turkey, huge chunks from Egypt. So Egyptologists obviously do Egyptian. In Iraq, like really early Iraq, the more in the southern part, like the super earliest stuff.
The really ancient stuff.
The good stuff.
like there's really three periods. It's for the listener, there's three periods in the ancient Near East, really. There's pre-interesting. This is what Eric works on. There's interesting, which is where I focus, mm-hmm. and then there's post-interesting, which is where Nathan works. So anyway, in the pre-interesting period, the very earliest stuff, in the very southern part of Iraq, there is this Sumerian culture there, and they produced a bunch of texts.
Yeah, and for me, what drove me to that, I was drawn to the antiquity of it.
Yeah. Because that's really – Sumer is where we get, like, the first human civilizations or that – kind of thing.
Writing, or very early.
Very early
that's
writing.
What I mean. Yeah.
Writing popped up in ancient Sumer and ancient Egypt about the same time.
Yeah, what time are you talking about?
Yeah, 3000-ish BC.
Yeah. And for reference, that's about 1200 years before Abraham.
Yeah, right. So for Abraham, it's ancient.
Yeah.
Yeah. So honestly, though, the route for me was I was drawn to the antiquity of it. I wanted to work in Genesis 1 to 11, and people would always talk about these myths from the ancient Near East.
Right.
And when you would trace those stories back, they would always talk about how it started with this Sumerian literature.
Right.
So in my head, it was, well, then I've got to
go back to the source.
I've got to do that.
Yeah.
But then the other thing for me that's really weird, and I looking back on it, I see the hand of God in this. Sumerian is natural to me. And Akkadian is very awkward. I struggle mightily to really understand Akkadian. It feels clunky. It feels foreign.
Yeah.
My brain just really struggles with it. And Sumerian, it's like I went home.
Yeah.
It's really hard to explain.
I should say, too, like, now to go to the Akkadian side.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that there is from Sumerian, once the Sumerian literature is produced, they're kind of, it's almost like Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. How we view Shakespeare, like they view Sumerian literature. So they try to like emulate it. They still study it. They talk about it. They reproduce it like forever. Mm-hmm. Once you get into Akkadian stuff, like the number of texts, the volume of text just explodes.
Yeah.
And where it appears explodes.
Yeah.
So you have everything from lists of materials. They have dictionaries and there's lawsuits and personal letters and love letters and transactions. You can track anything.
Yeah.
Anything that they recorded everything. And they recorded it on like on pottery, which is literally will last as long as the earth.
Yeah.
So
it's like literally written in stone, so to speak.
So you get songs and recipes and I love medical texts. Like I really like it. So you can get into like the daily concerns of these people and their things that they thought about. I mean, it's pretty sweet stuff.
Yeah, so that's kind of the time travel thing that I'm mentioning, right? Is like how do we recover that world for a broader audience so that we have a better understanding of the world of the Bible, which is really what we're talking about in the ancient Near East. So help us understand, like, given who these people are, the fact that you guys have taken a deep dive into that world, help our audience understand, like, who were these people and what did they care about? Mm-hmm. Like, give us a window into their worldview of how they saw things, interacted with the world themselves. I realize that's a really broad question, but you just kind of take it wherever you want
to go. Well, I'll start and then let Scott fill in the details. When you ask, what did they care about? They cared about what we care about.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
They wanted to have life. They wanted to make a living. They wanted to be able to feed their kids and raise their kids mm-hmm. in a good family. Mm-hmm. They wanted their family to do well. A lot of the real core basic, this is what it is to be human and what humans care about is consistent.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there's a similarity. Very much a similarity. It's like, hey, the same human things that we are concerned about. It's not like they were not human. They had the same.
So it's interesting to me that when moderns look at some of those practices or hear about some of their practices, like, wow, these people are so strange and so weird. Yep. And on the surface, it really feels that way, you know. But a lot of the core concerns that are driving the behaviors might be very, very different. The core concerns are the exact same.
Yep.
And it's super fascinating.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I think I would say a worldview thing that would be very helpful to understand is a farm. So if you start with a farm, think, okay, there's someone owns the farm, mm-hmm. right? And so let's say we got our farm owner, and then the farm owner has some kids, and the kids are in charge of making sure that the like don't think like 4-year-old kids. Let's say he's got your farm owner is 50, and his kids are 20, or whatever, right? Whatever the numbers are, and the kids are in charge of running the farm. And to run the farm, they also have families, right? And they're all, you know, they have their own concerns, but also there's workers that come and help run the farm,
mm-hmm.
right? And so this farm can produce things. So if you just kind of start with this thing, that's where all ancient Near Eastern people like would know this idea, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With the multi-generational home, and that would also have workers living and working with them, all eating and producing to make and making the farm work, right? So the reason it's helpful to start there is they also view like the world that way. So when they go to think about what is the world like, they think, oh, well, this world itself, it also produces a ton of stuff,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not ours, right? We're not in charge of it. We don't tell the grass to grow.
Right.
We don't tell, like, so essentially they run the analogy out and they think, okay, like, then what is our role on this farm?
Mm-hmm.
Do we own it? No. Like your role is to work it.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so where are the workers? Who owns it? Well, then they would view their purpose as being kind of set by essentially the farm owners, which would be who owns the world? And this is where you get the gods.
Yeah, totally. So I'm going to stop you right there and go, hey, that's very different from the modern worldview.
Yeah.
Right? The modern worldview is I own it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, who owns this? And everybody is going, I do.
Yeah.
Right. Which is very different. It causes all kinds of different, there are all kinds of different implications that come out of that.
Yeah.
Because now people are going, well, I can do whatever I want with it. Whereas a steward of something or a farm worker, a laborer is like, no, it's not mine.
Yeah.
I have to interact with it a certain way in order for it to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And if I don't do that, there are all kinds of, there are like consequences that follow.
Yeah. And on top of that, I would say like, so let's say you consider this family farm. And then you have, like, so you have the farm owner and his sons and daughters, and then you have the workers that join in, right? The worker's job is to do their job, and then they can go home.
Yeah.
Right? And they can go home and enjoy their families.
Yes.
Right? And so their view of everything is kind of like that. Like, our job is to get things and do things according to the farm owner, and then, like, we can enjoy our lives. This is, like, broadly.
Yeah.
Broadly,
yeah,
it's totally. So in the ancient Near. Do you agree, Eric?
Oh, yeah,
like,
for sure.
So, like, then, so their view of the world then is essentially like someone has set all this stuff up. Someone is in charge of all these things. Someone makes things happen. So as long as we can plug in, everything will be great. We just have to plug in as we're designed to.
Yep.
And I think the difference between like, yeah, I mean, today we think, okay, we all own this stuff. I own my property, right? Mm-hmm. They also owned property and they understood that.
Yeah.
And, but they also, one of the things they understood is like, okay, owning or being overseeing something is not the same thing as being able to control that thing.
Yeah, right.
And for things that they can't control, they would understand naturally as this farm. Right. Okay. Well, who is in charge of that thing? Mm. And so how does it work? We lean on material explanations.
Yep.
The what is the control? What makes these things happen? Oh, material makes these things happen.
Yeah.
They think the farm.
Yeah. Which in their worldview would have been, hey, this is where the deities come into play. The
Absolutely.
Gods
Absolutely.
Are ultimately over this thing.
Yes, that's right. So yep. I have to care for these things, and I have a role to play with these things, but they're not mine.
Yeah,
ultimately, right. In a sense, they're correct, and we're correct to say, okay, I can't make it rain.
Yeah,
and then so we say, well, what makes it rain? And we have a material explanation.
Yep,
and they would understand that I don't know that. This is a hard way. We're getting too far ahead of ourselves. They would have ultimately a dominion explanation.
Yeah, which is interesting to me, right? Because when it's like, hey, who makes it rain? Our answer is not really even answering that question. It's just how rain works.
Yeah,
right? That's
right.
That's our answer, which is a totally different question.
That's right.
Right? So even then, it's almost like in the ancient world, the default setting for them was further along than where a lot of people start in our culture.
Yeah.
Because we're answering the how question instead of the who is doing this.
Yeah.
Right? So how, like, who's making it rain? And we go, well, you know, the moisture in the air, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, you're describing how that happens.
Yeah.
We're asking the who question, which is a metaphysical one, right?
Yeah.
And that was, from what I understand, what I'm hearing you guys say, that was foundational to their worldview.
Yeah.
It's not like there was such thing as an atheist.
Right. Yeah. Essentially, no. That wouldn't make any sense. Essentially, like they think about these things in terms of the world that they know, and they talk about it in those terms. So they all live and work in extended families, and they understand that essentially that their life experience is just like the servants on a farm, like an extension of. Whatever they would say, okay, essentially this is a model for the way things work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, model is hard. It's not like quite so, it's an analogy for how they can understand it.
Yeah. So Eric, when you start saying like drawing these conclusions and stuff, obviously you guys have done a ton of study on this, but what are some of the, help our audience understand, like what are some of the primary pieces of literature that help us know like, okay, now like, We're drawing these conclusions because of this, and this.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the literature, you know, I started laughing as you were asking the question because Scott and I are involved in very different literature, you know, so my answer is going to be different. But as Scott was saying earlier, we have all kinds of literature, you know, everything from economic receipts. You know, yep. I gave 3 sheep to the temple this morning, yep. kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
To medicinal texts, to
letters,
yeah. how to deal with different things that are going on in the world,
yep.
which, you know, for us, it seems really weird, like they're jumping around, but because they'll talk about cosmology, you know, how the world works, and then they'll go into like a what sounds like a medical prescription,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
here's
yeah.
the medicine yeah. you take,
yep.
but then here's the incantation you say yep. while you're giving the medicine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to us, that's different stuff. To them, it's just, it all flows together
yeah.
really well. Super interesting stuff. But, you know, my main area has always been the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott gets more on the ground with the stuff he's into.
But talk to us about stories and law. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of times we'll, in the modern world, you know, we'll think about stories and we're like, oh, it's just like it's a fun way of connecting to an idea mm-hmm. or something like that. How did they use stories
yeah.
in the ancient world?
Yeah, they used stories to express opinions about the big issues in life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can think of it as kind of like speculative philosophy. Answering questions like, why are we here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of life?
Yeah.
Those kind of big questions.
Yeah.
When they wanted to try and express their ideas, they would tell stories.
Yeah. So if I was to ask you, if you're an ancient, you know, ancient Near Easterner, say you're a Sumerian, hallelujah, then, and I go, hey man, how did the world come to be? Right. In the modern world, we're thinking all about like the Big Bang theory. We're thinking mm-hmm. about like mm-hmm. Various scientific theories for the origin of the universe, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
In the ancient world, what I'm hearing you say is when you ask that question, how the world come to be, they tell a story.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
So yeah. like you're like, how did you do this? And it's like, well, a long time ago.
Yeah. Went on high. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was an Akkadian reference.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to be nice. And it's really interesting because they wouldn't even really ask the question that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, right, right.
You know,
right,
yeah. They would, if they were to say, how did you phrase the question?
How did the world come to be or something like that?
Yeah, when we ask that, we're thinking in terms of the material
that's right?
Yeah. And they want to know, why is the world the way it is?
Yeah, right. Which is a completely different question.
Yeah, but when you ask, how did the world come to be? When I'm in my modern mindset, I'm thinking materially.
Right.
When I'm thinking Sumerian literature, it's how did the world come to be the way it is, where things function the way and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they tell the stories. So why are things the way they are? Oh, well, let me tell you. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Mm-hmm. Now, the earth, we're going to start from a formless and void thing and blah, blah, blah. But then God's going to say, hey, let's have some light.
And then
there was light. It was really cool.
Yeah, totally.
That's how they answer those questions.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, it's not just how they are, like, it's very specific.
Mm.
Like, how did it come to be that Babylon is in charge right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's all the way down to there.
Yeah.
Because what they're interested in is how can we, like, live here successfully? What does that mean?
Yeah.
What is this place built to do? And how do we plug in appropriately?
Yeah.
Right. And is wisdom, by the way.
Yeah.
Learning how the deity wired the world so that we can act accordingly.
Yep.
Yep.
And which in order to do that, you have to know which deity's in charge,
mm-hmm.
which deity won the cosmic battle.
Yeah.
Like,
and if you look in Proverbs, it says wisdom was with God in the beginning when he created. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's AI.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the
it's like a mic drop.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, what they're saying is this place is built, and if you to do something,
yeah.
like it works a certain way. So plug in. Well, what does it mean mm-hmm. to plug in?
Yeah.
So does it mean how do you succeed in life? Do you get ahead or do you join with others?
Mm-hmm.
Do you play your role or do you try to get to the next role? What does actually success mean? Am I trying to become king?
Yeah.
Like, is that good? If I see injustice, what is justice actually? Like, all of these questions, this is what they're interested in. Like, justice is like this is right, this is wrong. And this is how you make it right, and this is how you make it wrong. All of that's built in. So when you see these weird creation stories where the gods are fighting, mm-hmm. what they're describing is, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't act like that. When they say, like, so when Babylon is on top and running things in the world, right, they're going to have to tell a creation story where their head god is running things.
Victorious. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So because that's basically saying, wait a minute, everything's working right now for Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
So, that means we're plugged in right. What you do is you tell the story that essentially says, here we go.
Yep.
This is how this whole place works. So every person knows their role, their job, what they're supposed to do, what's right and wrong. I mean, all of that's just nailed
in. And when it's not working right, you tell the story of what amounts to, what did we do that somehow drove the deity away?
Right.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah. Because what you're trying to do, you're not telling the story to tell them. Like, you would tell the story around a campfire, right? Mm-hmm. You don't tell the story because it's a fun story, although it is a fun story. You tell it because you want the listener to behave a certain way.
Right, right.
Right? There's a ton of examples.
This deity's in charge. This is the way that you need to behave because this deity cares about X, Y, and Z.
That's right. Yep. Here's success. Totally. Here's failure. And this is our purpose in life. And so if you just run these things, like, you will succeed and you'll be happy. And and if you go against them, you're fighting against the grain.
Yep.
Because the farm owner, like, he doesn't – this is what he wants. So let's plug in.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say last thing, like, that's, like, pretty universal is in the ancient world is humans are that worker class.
Mm-hmm.
They are not – they're not the members of the family,
right?
So the spiritual beings, these gods and whatever else, they're the farm owners, essentially.
Yeah.
We are essentially the farm workers, and we, as long as we do what they need, then we can be—
then we're good.
Then we're good to go.
Yep, right.
Yeah.
So talk to us about how did the world interact with itself? So you have different peoples, the Sumerians, the Akkadians, which, you know, the Neo-Babylonian people, the Hittites, you've got all these people. Where, how much of this basic worldview was shared by those people? How much interplay are they having with each other? Or is it pretty universal?
There are some commonalities.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. Like, for example, the farm analogy, you see that everywhere in the ancient Near East. But, you know, there's individual differences as well and that work themselves out. And aside from just going example by example example, it's hard to just make a blanket statement.
Okay. I think there are certain things you can do. Like, so like creation stories, you can think of them as like not just that they know a certain – they would be aware of each other's stories, but that they tell the same kinds of stories.
Right.
Right. And so they all have,
it's a culture script.
That's right.
All going off the same basic.
Yeah. Legal stuff, right? They don't all have to know each other's law systems, but they can be doing law the same kind of way so that they would understand when they went from place to place. It's highly interconnected.
Yeah.
Right. And there's material culture evidence for, you can see when that interconnectedness, like, is like super tight, and then you can see when it kind of fragments a bit. But even in the tightness and in the fragmentation, there is the other, right? Yep, it kind of ebbs and flows, but there is it's always there are things that are like universally common, like what Eric is saying. So the what's called the house of the father or the farmhouse thing, that they tell these creation stories like this, that they view the world like this.
Yeah.
And then there are things that are more peculiar to individuals, like what they wear, local traditions, the food stuff. We know that that's, you know, when you talk to Kyle, he'll tell you all about that.
Yeah. Various social differences that are going to play out in the way people are doing life.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you look at an Egyptian, you know, Egyptian art on a wall or whatever, like the Egyptians have a certain look and you're like, Egyptian.
For sure.
Yeah, I at the end of the day, I think what we're trying to get at for you guys is just to recognize that While there are a ton of similarities because they're human, the things they care about are basically the same. Like they want to, they want to have a prosperous life. They want to have a family with children and be blessed and have things function. Right. But at the same time, there are basic worldview things that we've touched on, in this episode to show you, like, they're starting from, different presuppositions than a lot of times we have in the modern world. And it's out of this world that there is this guy named Abram who picks up his family and goes to a land called Canaan, and there, becomes a patriarch of, what would later become known as Israel. And, and that's, so in other words, I'm saying, like, the actual historical events of the Bible happened in this world. And so if we're going to understand them correctly, then we have to at least recognize that, hey, there are differences there, and I need to try to understand them in order to be a good student of the text, so that I don't just, like, show up, open the Bible very superficially or one, two dimensionally, and read it more like a magic book more than anything, where it's like, oh, here's a snippet that I can, that's useful to me, instead of actually entering into the world of the scriptures so that, you know, you don't make these really common elementary mistakes. But y'all stay tuned, and we're going to keep on this journey.
You've been listening to the Eden Verse. If you liked it, subscribe, tell your friends, give us a rating, post it on the socials. If you have questions, email us at podcast@edenteam.org. If you'd like to learn more about our organization, visit theedenproject.org. And lastly, check out our other podcasts. We have tons of resources to help equip you in your walk with God. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Peace.